Self-Evident is a podcast that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident, but doing so in love. Hail and well met, everybody. This is Jenna, and with me today is my lovely co-host, Alyssa, and we are back for part two with our podcast with Scott Phelps, and he is the head of the National Marriage Campaign. And where can people find you online?
NationalMarriageCampaign.com.
And they recently also have a fantastic Instagram account. So if you're on social media, go ahead and give them a follow. We're going to put that in the description below in this podcast. So part two now, we're going to be focusing more about policies. We're going to have just kind of like this miscellaneous conversation, and I'm really excited about it. The National Marriage Campaign is focused on encouraging young people to catch on to the dream of marriage as a good and beautiful and true thing. And recently we just went through an election where Donald Trump is now going to be the next president of the United States. And it seems now that we can have more of an open discussion about how politics and policies can help and affect life, basically, for the better. And so I wanted to ask you, starting out, what policies would you consider or could you advise the new Trump administration to implement that would encourage young people to marry before having children and even stay married?
Yeah, very good. I mean, we wish that the government didn't have to be involved at all, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
But it is. So again, in a perfect world, I would say the government has nothing to do with it. You know, leave people alone, let people figure it out for themselves with their parents and their family and their church and so forth. But the government is involved. And the reality is that the government actually is at the forefront of pushing a lot of really bad stuff. You know, if you look at all of the gender identity and the Title IX and the boys and women's sports and all the stuff that is being pushed by government regulation and requirement, it's doing great harm, great damage to our kids. So the first thing that a new administration can do is stop all the nonsense. Mm. And there's been an indication that that's very much on their agenda. And that would be great right there. So number one, just stop all the bad stuff. If you can do that, I'd be very happy. And we should. We should. And during the first term of the Trump administration, that didn't happen. They didn't stop all the bad stuff. So let's just start there. That doesn't seem like too high of a bar to ask.
Right.
That you just stop the government from pushing onto schools and businesses and organizations draconian requirements for very harmful policies, whether it's gender identity or whatever. So that would be first. So stop the bad stuff. Then if you're going to insist on doing something, how about this for a policy? First, do no harm. First, do no harm. How about we start off with government policies that are pro-marriage and pro-family and help people to accomplish family formation? So, first of all, educationally, what we would want to see is, I hesitate because I don't even like the federal role involved in education, you know?
Yeah. You know, like you said before, if we were in a perfect world, we would not have to be having this conversation.
Exactly. They have talked about getting rid of the Department of Education. That would be a good first step in terms of do no harm, stopping all the bad. That would be great to see that happen. But failing that, if there's going to be federal policy, let's just say that, if there's going to be federal policy, then it should be focused on providing young people with optimal health. And in the area of sexual activity, optimal health is objectively reserving all sexual activity for the context of a marriage relationship. That shouldn't be so hard to do. And that's currently not the case, right? So let's just do that. Let's first of all stop all the crazy, and then let's institute policies that require that we teach young people what is objectively the safest, healthiest, best option available for them, and that is reserving all sexual activity for marriage. So that's what we would want to see. And that actually is what was signed into law under the Bill Clinton administration, actually, Republican Congress, Democrat president. It's called Title V. And Title V, it was a government policy that was connected to welfare reform. And what welfare reform was trying to do was increase self-sufficiency among people so that they would not be on government subsidies, food stamps, welfare, that kind of a thing. And what the government realized is if we want to reduce people's dependency on government checks and food stamps, what we really need to do is encourage them toward marriage and family, because if people get married and have a family, they tend to be much more self-sufficient. All the statistics, all the data shows that, right? That your poverty rates, especially for children in a marriage relationship, are going to be significantly lower than for those outside. So the chances that you're going to be on food stamps or government dependent if you are in a married two-parent household are significantly reduced. Therefore, Title V is part of welfare reform in 1990, I want to say it was 1996 that passed, was designed to provide sort of an alternative to the sex education program. And it was abstinence education, but specifically it was abstinence until marriage education. That was Title V. And so there's a very clear emphasis in Title V on teaching the value of waiting until marriage, how that's going to be beneficial for you and helpful for you. And that was a good program. The Title V program provided, again, better not to have anything, but if you're going to have something, at least this was providing something good. And it provided for schools to be able to have programs like ours that would give a very clear message on the benefits of marriage and family and waiting for it. Okay. However, and this is an unforced error, I would say, under the previous Trump administration, a group of conservatives came back in. They changed the Title V guidelines away from abstinence until marriage to something called sexual risk avoidance education that we talked about in part one. And so the guidelines that were coming from the government were not nearly as clear as what we had under Title V. So Title V had a very clear teach them to wait until marriage. And then that got changed by under the previous administration, the conservatives under the Trump administration came in and they said, let's make it, you know, a little broader, a little easier for people, because, you know, we just need to do so. So they really moderated the language such that now it's hard to find a very clear message on abstinence until marriage.
That is
fascinating. Which again
is
why we launched the National Marriage Campaign, because we're still trying to hold the banner high as it was under Title V for the marriage component, which has been largely removed. It's there, but it's weakened. It is much less prominent. And there's been extra, I would say it's been diluted, right? They added stuff, they reduced the marriage stuff and added other stuff to where it's harder to find now. And I would much rather go back to a clearer, focused message on the benefits of abstinence until marriage as we had previously under Title V. That's my opinion. And I'm sharing with you the change that was made. So for a new administration, I would want to argue, and I will argue, that we go back to clearer guidance in that program.
The if lines we have need to have be that redrawn. Program at all. Right.
Right. Now, speaking of the desire for lower infections, lower disease rates, we've seen an uptick of STDs. So can you speak a little bit on that, of why that is, what policies could be encouraging that, in fact?
Well, it's more than an uptick, actually. STD rates have been going through the roof for years. It's pretty much a straight line up. There was a little bit of a hiccup under COVID for some, not for others.
That's kind of ironic.
That's very ironic.
Yeah. So STDs are a significant problem today. And the reason is, here's the illustration I like to use. So my family and I, we like to go camping. We've camped at all the, you know, a lot of the major wonderful parks, Yellowstone, Yosemite, the Grand Tetons. You know, we've been to some wonderful parks around the country. And every time we go camping, there will always be a sign. In fact, I took a picture last year. We were camping out at Lake Tahoe, California. I took a picture of this sign, because you will always see this sign. And it will always say, campfires in designated fire pit area only. It doesn't say no campfires.
Right.
Nothing wrong. That's why it's called campfire. It's a fire you have at camp. There's nothing wrong with campfires. It's part of camping. Get out your guitar, get out your marshmallows, roast some s'mores, do a little kumbaya. campfire is a part of camping. But what? But you can't just make a fire anywhere. We've made the circle of rocks, and then we dug down a couple of feet. And if you put the fire down in there, then it's going to be great. You're going to have pine trees all around you. You're going to have a beautiful experience. It's going to be great.
It's contained.
It's contained. But if you just say, oh, not a big deal, I can have a fire anywhere I want, you'll burn the place down.
Yeah.
Marriage is the fireplace that contains sexual activity. But when you go outside the fireplace, which is where we are today, and you just say, no, I can have sex with anybody I want, wherever I want, whenever I want, and I don't have to be married, it doesn't matter, you'll burn the place down. And we are living in the middle of a forest fire.
That is insane. And frankly, I do think that it's very, very true. I know that's why a lot of young people today have very skeptical views about marriage too. They see pain and the sorrow that our culture is in, especially because we're so relentlessly online. It's constantly, the world is never shut off from us. It's 24/7. We're getting this very depressing picture of how life is. I know a lot of people our age, you know, age maybe 15 to 26, I think that's Generation Z. We have an overwhelming amount of us that are crippled by anxiety, that are immobilized by depression. A lot of it comes from seeing how the world is right now and having no hope, being like, well, what's the point of getting married? Well, what's the point of having friends, of having community when humanity is so evil? What is the solution?
Well, now I'm getting depressed. No, no, I'm serious. I agree with you completely. And, you know, we were talking before we started recording that, you know, we've never really done much in terms of podcasts because I just hate social media. Yeah. I think it's so toxic and destructive. I've never wanted to do social media. I still don't do Facebook or Instagram or any of that stuff. I need to, but I keep promising, all right, I'm going to get a new, I hate it. I hate it. Mm. I'm already, you know, online more than I want to be. I don't want to be more online than I am now. I want to be less online than I am. And I just think it's so destructive and harmful. Forget the content, just the whole lack of interpersonal relationships that have been lost by constantly scrolling through your phone. It's just, it's devastating to us. Now add in toxic content. My goodness, no wonder these poor kids are suffering so badly. It's a huge problem. You know, one of the things that we're going to do in our program on teaching abstinence until marriage is unfortunately going to include, does include guidance and encouragement in this area. So we have practical steps on social media, cutting back your social media. You know, don't sleep with your phone in your room. We say, charge your phone in another room overnight. Don't have it by your bedside. All these kind of practical things to try to help you break free. But it's so difficult. So each of our programs, we've got five different curriculum that are part of the program. Every one of them has a chapter on media. I always say it's the biggest lift. It's the hardest part of our communication. How do you tell people, you know, don't do media?
Right. It's our public square. This is where people interact.
It's like you said, yeah. It's like you said earlier, if you're not on there. So this is the challenge. It's really, really tough to try to help people pull back because even we as adults don't pull back, you know? And that's the sad thing is that you see parents and families, you know, scrolling on their phone at the restaurant or whatever, and they're not engaging. Look, I had a wonderful experience during pandemic. I should say the pandemic.
Everybody knows what we're talking about. Yep.
During the pandemic. So it would have been like 19 or 20, whatever it was. I went to speak at a camp up in central Wisconsin. We're located here in the Chicago area. And I was invited to do a weekend winter retreat in February when it was below zero in central Wisconsin. For some reason, I said, yes, I'll be happy to do that.
Oof.
And so I went up and it was during mask season. You know, remember the mask crazy stuff?
Yeah.
But what I loved about it was central Wisconsin people, they didn't do the mask thing. They were like, that's dumb. We're not doing that. I loved them already. But then they had this thing where it was like, you can't bring your phones to the weekend retreat. You had to turn them, put them in a basket. When you got there, you get them when you get back. So I had a whole weekend with a group of high schoolers, nobody wearing masks, nobody having a phone. What did I witness for the weekend? in below zero temperature, constant activity and interaction. Going into the cafeteria, you could hardly hear, it was so loud. And it was just the engagement of these kids with one another was such a stark picture of the world I lived in, where everyone has a mask and a phone. Take away the mask, take away the phone, and it's an entirely new world. I felt like I had, you know, I landed in Narnia. It was crazy. And so it was so beautiful. It was so, the contrast was so stark. I couldn't help but sit back in awe and just say, wow, this is what life used to be like. When kids were just having fun, goofing around, you know, they were playing ice hockey and broom ball and just all kinds of activities and talking and laughing and up late at night, 0 degrees outside playing broom ball. I mean, it was just really, really sweet. It's a vision of what Jenna and Alyssa, I guess, can be, but how to get there, man, oh man, we should all go to camp in Wisconsin, I guess.
Well, I actually have an encouraging story for you then, because I know that as you've been in this culture war for years and years and years, and you've been holding the front line for so long, and it's so easy to get discouraged by seeing, you know, you're on the front line. So you're seeing like the worst of the worst. And so you're not really realizing, well, what am I protecting? And if you just dig a little bit, and I know our audience doesn't really know this either, but there is a remnant with Gideon with his 300 men. I actually wanted to share with you this Saturday, actually, I had been contacted by a acquaintance of mine who said that his passion for the longest time has been to reconnect young people, like what you were talking about, to have in-person interaction. Because social media is a mask in and of itself, right? You're only sharing what you want people to see about your life. Even if you are like posting that you're such a victim, you're doing this, you're doing that. And it's just either to glean empathy or to glean jealousy. Basically, that is what social media is about. He was so sick of it to the point where he's like, I need to do something about this. And so he got his church involved, and he is throwing a gala to have young people reconnect in a positive, uplifting, encouraging manner. And he's asking people to leave their phones at the door to just come and meet people and talk. So there is a remnant, and you just need to be able to open your eyes and even start it where you're at right now. So there is still hope.
So speaking of the ministry of the National Marriage Partnership, all the work that you guys are trying to do, it is absolutely beautiful, the work you are doing for the kingdom. But we have an amazing upcoming event that is featuring you at our Worldview Conference. So can you tell us a little bit, maybe a sneak peek into what you're going to be talking about?
Well, I'm thrilled, first of all. I love, 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 of course, everything IFI does, Illinois Family Institute. And I've had the opportunity to participate in the Worldview Conference before, and I'm thrilled to be able to do so again, especially with Brad Wilcox, who is the author of a new book called Get Married. And it's a terrific book showing the clear cultural benefits of marriage for individuals and society. And it's a terrific book. So Brad will be speaking and I will be speaking. And I will be going over what the National Marriage Campaign is all about, and that is equipping and encouraging young people to understand the beauty and the value of marriage and why waiting for marriage matters. So we'll have a couple of sessions where we walk through some of the information that we've covered on the podcasts here in terms of why this is a really necessary message. And I would say my sneak peek would be that there are three key metrics that we're really concerned about culturally that the National Marriage Campaign addresses well. Number one, the non-marital birth rate at 40%. That is to say 40% of American children are born without the benefit of a married mother and father. That's a very challenging cultural issue to deal with. And so the non-marital birth rate being at an all-time high of 40% is our first concern. A second concern is marriage rates at an all-time low. So I'll put up data and statistics and graphs historically showing that since the sexual revolution in 1969, Woodstock, you have had a marriage rates falling off a cliff. And you have had a huge increase in sex outside of marriage, increase in divorce, drop in marriage rates, all of that. That's the second. And then the third big metric that we're concerned about is the declining fertility rate, that we're not having enough children to sustain ourselves. And so our country is in decline, as is much of Europe and other parts of the world. It's referred to as demographic winter is a very real concern. And so this is part of the reason why our message to young people is not sex is bad because you might get pregnant and that pregnancy is a bad thing. We don't believe that. We believe that sex is good and pregnancy is good and babies are good. And so we want young people to understand. What I like to say is we're not a pregnancy prevention program, we're a pregnancy promotion program. So what we want young people to understand is not that babies are a bad thing to be avoided, but rather a hope to be cherished. And so what we want to say is, yeah, it's really important that we not be teaching them, you know, don't have sex because a bad thing could happen, like pregnancy, or use contraception so that a bad thing doesn't happen, like pregnancy. In fact, it's often, here are the two bad things that can happen to you if you have sex or if you don't use quote-unquote protection. You could get pregnant or get a disease, as though those two things are of similar. You see the problem with that messaging? And it is the message that's out there.
Pregnancy is a disease.
Pregnancy and a disease are bad things. And what we want to say is, you know, time out. Could we hold on for a second? Could we back up the car a little bit? Because a disease is a bad thing. A baby is a beautiful thing. So let's separate those things out. And let's teach young people that babies aren't bad things to be avoided, but rather a hope to be cherished. And so what we want to do is,
You should get married so you can have a cradle to put that baby in.
Exactly. So the message should be babies are wonderful, amazing, and beautiful, and pregnancy is a good thing. And in fact, it's so good and so beautiful and so wonderful and so special. You should reserve it for the context of a marriage relationship. That's going to be better for your baby, better for you, better for your spouse, better for your culture, better for your community. It's a good thing. That's our message.
That is such a wonderful, wonderful end to our interviews with Scott Phelps, the founder of the National Marriage Campaign. Scott, thank you so, so, so very much for coming onto the Self-Evident Podcast. We so appreciate you and the work that you do, and we can't wait to work with you and see what God has in store for you guys in the future.
Well, you two are wonderful, and you give me hope for America.
Well, praise the Lord for that.
Yes. No,
I'm serious. It's really an encouragement to me to see the two of you and your team really lifting up what is good and beautiful and true and leading your generation in that way. We need more of you, and we need your message to get out there. And we will do whatever we can to help get your message out there, because what you're doing is an extremely necessary work. So God bless the both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And with all that being said, let us continue to firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.